Welcome to Phoenix Boats Bassmaster Radio, brought to you by Visit Anderson, South Carolina, home of beautiful Lake Hartwell. The Rapala family of fishing products, including VMC hooks and 13 fishing rods, reels, and more. And the Bass Angler Sportsman Society. Now, here's your host, lifetime BASS member, Tom Abraham.
Welcome to this week's episode of Phoenix Boats Bassmaster Radio. I am Tom Abraham, your guide for the next hour as we feature the Bassmaster Elite Series and those looking to get into that exclusive group through the St. Croix Bassmaster Open Series and the up-and-comers on the Strike King Bassmaster College Series and the tens of thousands of Bass Nation anglers around the country competing on the local level, all with a chance to advance to the big leagues of professional fishing. Now, the Bass Nation operates youth, high school, and college programs, including a Junior Bassmaster Championship, High School National Championship, College National Championship, and the College Bracket event, leading to a Bassmaster Classic berth. The Bass Nation is at the grassroots of who we are. And for more information about how to become a member or to start a Bass Nation club, visit Bassmaster.com and click on the Nation tab. Now, the best way to communicate with the show is to visit our Facebook fan page at Facebook.com/Bass or on Twitter at Bassmaster and use the hashtag Bass Radio. You can also listen to all the shows at Bassmaster.com/radio or just hit the Nation tab at Bassmaster.com and click on Bassmaster Radio. Our first cast segment of the show is brought to you by 13 Fishing, and we have a great deal for you right now. The Gerald Swindle Design Meta Series Rods and Inception G2 Reels are available at 13fishing.com along with all their other great products. And for a limited time, you can get 20% off your entire order by using the discount code BASSRADIO20. That's BASSRADIO20, only at 13fishing.com. Now, I fish these rods and reels myself and could not be happier. Get 20% off with the code BASSRADIO20. The Elites have wrapped up back-to-back tournaments in South Carolina and Santee Cooper. They did not disappoint as well, with Big Mama showing up, at least for the guys at the top of the leaderboard. It's hard to say that an event that was won with nearly 97 pounds was a grinder, but it was. I mean, unless you landed on them just right, and that's what Oklahoma pro Luke Palmer did to get his first Elite Series win in his fifth season. He's coming up a little bit later on in the Rapala winner circle. Mark Menendez may have snatched that trophy had he not had just 9.5 pounds on day two, but he rallied with big bags on day three and four to finish second, and he's coming up as well. And Drew Cook made a valiant attempt to go back-to-back at Santee Cooper and came up just short, finishing third, and with that moved into second place in the Angler of the Year standings. Now, with his buddy Drew Benton winning last week at Lake Murray, the next couple of episodes of The Cutline on YouTube are going to be pretty good. Drew Cook joins us now on the VMC Redline Hook. Drew, welcome to the show. How are you?
Pretty good. How about you? Thank you for having me.
Well, I appreciate you joining us, and I am fantastic. Not as good as you are, but you must have had a lot of confidence going back into Santee Cooper, and it wasn't like, I'm not sure what you did during practice. Do you just kind of check on the spots that were good for you last year? But it wasn't like you strayed an awful lot from what you did to have to get the win last year.
Yeah, I tried a lot of other stuff in practice, just because I knew the amount of pressure that area was going to get, and I wasn't wrong. But I honestly could not get a bite just fishing. I had to be looking at one on bed, and whenever I finally figured that out, it was pretty simple what I was going to do.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's your thing, right? I mean, you're becoming noted as one of the best bed fishermen out there and being able to see them, which includes you talk about the concoction that you were spraying on the water there to kind of get rid of some of that pollen so that you could see them a little bit.
Yeah. Most of the time, if there's, just some pollen, it's just Dawn dish soap and water. Mm-hmm. If you get in a place where it's like really thick, matted almost pollen, put a little bit of rubbing alcohol in there and with it, and it'll help disperse all that stuff so you can see. And I used to use a super soaker, like a squirt gun, kid squirt gun.
Yeah.
But they kept cracking in my boat, so that's why. And you had to fill them up like 3 or 4 times a day. So I went with a big Roundup sprayer. so I can fill it up. I think I filled it up one time during the event.
Wow. People must have thought you were out there spraying the weeds or something. But, you know, all the tricks and techniques of the guy that is a sight fisherman. And, you know, and it was that big baits fighting frog that doesn't really look like a frog except for those little hands that it has, I guess, in the front. But, you know, it looks like a great creature bait. And last week it was, you know, your buddy Drew Benton doing a lot of damage with it and taking a win at Murray. And this week you do the same thing. So, you know, that fighting frog is like an ATM machine, I guess, in South Carolina.
Yeah, it's been pretty good to me. Yeah, that was obviously my main bait last year, mm-hmm. and it was one of my main baits this year. The, you know, the fighting frog and the big bite quarantine crawl were my 1-2 punch, if you would. Mm-hmm. And actually, it was a 3-part deal. I was using the 5-inch fighting frog and the 4-inch fighting frog and the quarantine crawl.
You see, you wouldn't think it would make that much of a difference between the 5-inch and the 4-inch. Talk about what would make you decide to alternate back and forth between the two.
If I was ever blind fishing for a pair, like, you know, there was a big female with a smaller male, I would, you know, start out with the 5-inch, something that the male is not just going to run over there and grab. You know, obviously we want to catch female first. So that's where I would use that. And another time, if I was fishing for just the male on the bed and say I was flipping the quarantine crawl, and, you know, he wasn't quite reacting quick enough, pitch that big fighting frog in there and maybe, like, you know, get some grass on it or something and pull it through the bed. And I honestly think that, if you've ever spent much time bed fishing, you've seen a turtle go through a bed and how it completely changes the demeanor of the fish. Mm-hmm. I've seen 7-pounders eat turtles. I've seen them, you know, put them in their mouth and carry them out into, you know, away from the bed and spit them out. But whatever happens whenever something big like that swims through the bed, they'll normally bite the next flip. So a lot of times I would take the big fighting frog, flip it in there, and, you know, they might not eat it right then, or they might eat it, spit it out, but my next flip in there with either the quarantine crawl or the 4-inch fighting frog, they would bite it.
So you were on the turtle pattern, basically. Is that what you're telling us? You're find a turtle, find a fish?
Something like that.
Something like that. Yeah, something like that, for sure. And, you know, talk about day four a little bit for you. What's disappointing, I know, you know, with the 11-pound, 12-ounce on day four. What changed? Obviously, you know, with the weather, it becomes more difficult maybe to see. But what was the biggest thing that changed for you on day four, where a number of guys really struggled on that last day?
Yeah, I knew day four was going to be really tough. But at the same time, if the fish that I was finding on bed were so far apart and so few and far between, I was having to cover a lot of water, to find them. And obviously with the conditions that we had, you know, with it blowing so hard and raining and cloudy, it was going to make that very difficult. You know, I was torn between what to do, 'cause I knew not having any pressure in there would help a lot. You know, they would stay up on the bed and I'd be able to, you know, they'd act a lot better, but I just didn't think I was going to be able to find, I really didn't think I was going to be able to find three of them. Mm-hmm. So I just opted to stay, right there in Talkaw, Creek and just fish. And, you know, I mean, it doesn't look like it from, you know, what I caught or, you know, from the live, if you're watching, but I should have had over 20 pounds before 9 o'clock. So I can't be really mad. Mm-hmm. Because I got the bites that I thought if I fished all day long, as hard as I could in that creek, I could catch 20 pounds or even more, you know. I mean, we've put back a bunch of fish right there all week. And I lost three of them that were, you know, we're good. We're big ones, and you know, can't come back to that, because it seems like, and a lot of the guys that I talked to, about 9:30, 10 o'clock, they turned the light switch off.
Yeah.
You could not buy a bike. It was the craziest thing.
Yeah. And it was weird because Luke did a lot of his damage. Like, he hadn't had anything early on and then was able to do some damage later on where he was fishing. It was a lot calmer area that kind of stayed that way. But as it turns out, at least you know in your mind that, yeah, okay, let's say I have those fish. Let's say I have 21, 22 pounds. He ran away and hid. I mean, it was just one of those deals where, you know, if you had a 21-pound bag, you're still 10 pounds behind the guy. At least it's better that way, right? It's not. It's better than that. Absolutely. Than to know that you lost by 3 pounds, you know, and you had 11 pounds on the last day.
Yeah. I told my camera guy that on the final day. I said, I really, really hope that Luke catches him, because it's going to really sting if, you know, he struggled, like, really bad. And I lost those fish.
Yeah.
Because those opportunities to win don't come around often.
Yeah. Well, they seem to be coming around more and more for Drew Cook, that's for sure. And, again, now second in the points in the AOI standings. Drew, congratulations on a great event. We appreciate you joining us. And, hey, who knows? We might be talking to you again. Top three always come on. So hopefully we'll be chatting again sometime this summer.
Hopefully so. I appreciate y'all having me.
All right. Thank you. That's Drew Cook. All right. We're going to break in here. When we come back, Mark Menendez finished second in this derby, and we'll talk to him right here on Phoenix Boats Bassmaster Radio on the Bassmaster Radio Network.
Welcome back to Phoenix Boats Bassmaster Radio. Now, here's your host, Tom Abraham.
And welcome back to Phoenix Boats Bassmaster Radio. This segment of the show is brought to you by the good folks in Anderson, South Carolina. Well, why not, right? It's been all about South Carolina for the last couple of weeks. But look, Lake Hartwell and the group down there at Anderson, Visit Anderson, South Carolina, Neil Paul and his whole team do such a great job. They're so welcoming every time the Bassmasters or any of the tours come out to Lake Hartwell. And, of course, it was just announced that the high school national championship will be there again with the youth as well. And Anderson itself is just great. I mean, you go to Anderson, I always take my wife with me when I go over there to fish Hartwell, and we stay right in Anderson and love the restaurants and the shops. She shops there, and it's just absolutely tremendous. Anderson, South Carolina, if it didn't exist, you'd have to invent it. Go to visitanderson.com to learn more about that. All right, Mark Menendez. I mean, this was fun. We were watching Mark Menendez throwing a cutter worm, doing most of his damage on a set group of trees. And Mark's not shy. I mean, this is a guy that, you know, is a TV show host, so he'll tell you what's going on. Did a great job educating a lot of people, and he joins us now. Finished second in this derby, and he joins us now on the VMC hook. Mark, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm doing well, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Well, you tore them up over there pretty good. And I got to go to the day two weigh-in, because I was actually listening to it. I was driving back from Gunnersville, and I was listening to the weigh-in in my truck. And I heard that, because you had a huge first day, and you had a very disappointing second day, 9.5 pounds. And you said on the stage, you know, honey, I'm not coming home. I made a check, and I'm going to fish again tomorrow. And I thought your attitude was so great to come, you know, to back up that huge bag that you had on day one, 21 pounds and 14 ounces with 9 pounds, 7 ounces. And your attitude was, I made the cut and I'm fishing day three. I thought that was fantastic.
Well, you know, you have to be a goal setter, Tom. And every Bassmaster event, my first goal is to make that 50 cut. You get a paycheck if you make that 50 cut and the opportunity to move up. So I've taken advantage of that twice this year. At Seminole, I barely made the 50 cut. I was in 49th, and I finished in 18th after a 21-pound bag. 31 free points came my way for Angler of the Year points. So at this one, I was at Santee Cooper Lakes. I was in 34th, and I bounced to 4th after the third day. I grabbed another 30 points. So I ended up luckily coming in second and gathering another 32. That's 63 points, Tom, that I gathered on the third day. That's like fishing another tournament.
Yeah.
That's like having another event in the schedule. And that's how you make classics. And I was really excited about the 9.7 to make the 10 pounds or the $10,000 to get that 50 cut. So I wasn't disappointed about that, but I knew that with the way the weights were and how many big fish were in the lake, it was probably going to prohibit me somewhere. I had no idea that a 28-pound bag was coming the next day. I knew I could catch a few fish. I felt confident that I could catch a few fish. And if I was lucky enough to get five, Tom, I could have another nice bag. But the 28-pound bag was just it just fell in my lap. It really set the tone for day number four.
And it pushed you into 27th in the Angler of the Year standing so solidly above, you know, halfway point of the season now and solidly above that that classic line. But it's been kind of weird for you because it's been all or nothing really for the most part, right? You had a couple of stinkers and then you had a couple of really good tournaments to finish 18th at Seminole, like you said, and make 10 grand there. And then $35,000 finished second at Santee Cooper, regardless of the money. You know, the points are fantastic.
Yeah, they are. And, you know, the other two tournaments really weren't stinkers. They weren't bombs. They were lower finishes. Mm. You know, you've got to avoid those 80s.
Right.
It's hard to come back from those 80 finishes. So I had a couple right there in the 67, 68 range there. And those are decent, you know, finishes there.
Right.
So anyway, that's okay. I wish they were better than that. I wish they were 50s, but they weren't. So I avoided those bombs, and gathering those other points on those day threes has really helped. So halfway home, you know, you look in the rearview mirror and you feel good about your fishing. You're doing well. You're not decisions. My execution has been really good. Now, day two's execution at Santee, you talk about a circus. It was terrible. I had a 6-pounder make a mockery of me. I lost a couple of nice little keeper fish. I missed several fish, and just my execution on my cast were not good. At that point, I was fishing up in the jungle, up the lake up there, and you have to have pinpoint accuracy, or you're just hung up and you're fighting the trees the whole time. And it was a tough grind. 1 o'clock, Tom. 1 o'clock. I had one in the boat that was about a 15-incher, and that's all I had. And I'm thinking, you know, I'm going to screw this up. I'm going to have had a really good first day, and I'm not even going to come out of this with a check. And I had a choice. I could run back down to my cypress trees and gamble on one bite, or stay where I was, maximize my time, and try to get, you know, three or four bites to get a limit. I managed getting two nice 2-pounders and one that was about a 3.5, and that carried me into the third day. So I gave myself an opportunity to move up just by making that third day. So I'm proud of that. I was really struggling. I'm glad you didn't have a camera on me. Well, there was a camera on me, Tom, because it was
there
terrible.
Was. now you have that, you know, you move up to 30 spots. It's 27 pounds, 13 ounces, just barely, the second biggest bag of the entire tournament on day three. What was it? Was it a change in location or a change in technique or both?
No, it was getting in a good flowing rhythm. The first one I caught that morning was a 7.5-pounder, and I caught it within the first 30 minutes. And I'm like, well, hey, that's good. That's going to move me up a little bit. And a few minutes later, I catch another really good one, a solid 6. And then I realized that the set of trees I was fishing, it was about a bite an hour. So I could set my clock, you know, the 7 o'clock hour, I got my bite, my 8 o'clock hour, I got my bite. So between 8 and 9, I'm fishing along, and about 8:45, I get that bite. So I'm 3 for 3 on my hourly catches. And it just went that way, Tom. And the first 5 I caught was the 27-13, and I stuck around all day in hopes of culling a 4-pounder that was my smallest fish, because I knew weather was coming on day 4, and I had no idea if I would even get a window to go fish those trees on day 4.
Yeah, Mark Menendez with us here. You did get a window. You got those 2 6-pounders early on day 4. You took the lead. I don't know if you've watched the coverage yet at all, if you've seen it, but you actually take the lead because Luke Palmer is coming up stones early on. But I got to ask you about something. I'm fascinated by the electronics. I've resisted the forward-facing sonar because I just don't have enough time on the water to learn it. I'm fine with 360 and down, you know, sonar, and that's it. But having said that, you turned yours off because you felt like that signal would bounce off the trees and come back and make noise. Palmer used it the whole time, and that's how he would determine how many fish were in the tree, and he would fish for every last fish in the tree. So tell us about that. What clued you into thinking that, you know what, maybe it's making noise coming off the tree? I thought that was fascinating.
Well, my bass were sharing the area with 2 other species. They were sharing the area with blue catfish, and they were sharing the area with Earnhardt's racing striped fish called stripers. Mm-hmm. And my area had some current in it. So I knew how the fish were positioned just due to the current. The catfish were out away from the trees. The stripers were up high in the water column above the bass, and the bass were at the base of the trees. So when I got there in practice, I only caught one fish from the area. It was about a 6-pounder. Caught it on a 4.0 Strike King crankbait. And I'm using active target. I'm looking, and I'm seeing fish, but I'm seeing fish leaving the trees when I put the laser beam on them. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, huh. Now, some of those aren't bass. Some of these are these other fish. But I started noticing that the bass were positioned at the base of the tree, and I started seeing some of those bail on me. So I thought, you know what? This is pretty simple because the current was there. I know where they're going to be positioned. They're going to be on the edge of a tree on this side or that. I don't have to fish all the way around the tree. So with that in hand, Tom, I just elected to be as stealthy as I could, turn everything off with the exception of my front depth finder that I'm using to know what the depth is. Depth was a key. All of my fish were in 5 feet of water, so depth was a key. And fish, go fish old school. I knew I wasn't going to get 20 bites a day, but I knew I would get 5 to 7 bites a day. And it was very relaxing not have to – my neck got a reprieve, Tom, from being stooped over and looking all the time like we've been for the last 4 or 5 events that we've had. I just didn't use it, and it was a very natural feel. The flow was good. My timing was good, and it was just absolutely a joy to go fishing and not worry about forward-facing this time.
Yeah, I could do an hour with Mark Menendez. Unfortunately, we're out of town. But I was just so excited to see you going back-to-back because you've had the neck issues and the back issues and so on. You had the bicycle seat on the front of your boat, and I'm looking at that. I'm like, boy, we don't see that a lot anymore. But here it was back-to-back, and on the championship Sunday of the second week, you were hanging in there and had 23-9 and gave yourself a chance to win if Palmer didn't just go nuts. So that was great stuff. Mark Menendez has been our guest. Mark, good luck to rest of the season. Top three come on after every elite event. I got a feeling we might be talking to you again. This is a magical season I think you're going to have here.
Well, I hope so. I'm in a good place. The economics are great when you come in second, so you've got a little cushion there. You don't have to worry about that. When you have these good tournaments like this, you just fish better, Tom. You relate more to your decision-making, the outside factors, the money, the travel, being away from hunting your family. Those kind of go away a little bit. So I hope you're forward facing the new the rest of the schedule this year, and I'll be happy to talk to you anytime.
That'd be
thanks
a beautiful,
for having me.
Beautiful thing for sure, Mark Menendez. All right, we'll get a break in here when we come back to wrap a winner's circle with Luke Palmer. That's next. Phoenix Boats Bassmaster Radio on the Bassmaster Radio Network.
Welcome back to Phoenix Boats Bassmaster Radio. Now, here's your host, Tom Abraham.
And welcome back to Phoenix Sports Bassmaster Radio. And it's time now for the Rabble Winner Circle. And what a young man. This was a very popular win. We have wins on the tour, and this is a first win in the Elite Series for Luke Palmer. And it's a very popular win for Luke Palmer. He's been on the show before, but he joins us now in the Rabble Winner Circle. He is Luke Palmer. Luke, welcome to the show. Congratulations on the win. How are you?
I'm doing well. Hey, appreciate that, bud. Thank you.
Describe your week. How whirlwind has it been? How many estimate the texts and calls that you have gotten and how big a deal this is for your sponsors as well for you to get this victory?
Oh, it's been nuts. I mean, it has been. It's been a great, wild, crazy, I've enjoyed it. Normally, you get a couple hundred, likes, mm-hmm. phone calls, texts, whatever. And I think the first hour after I won, there was, 300-400 text messages. I had numbers. I didn't even know people had my number, So it was good. I mean, it's really cool to see the following, I talked to my dad earlier today, and he was like, he needed something at the hardware store about an order, but he was like, there's people coming in that I had no idea that even followed fishing.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, they're coming in asking when you're going to be back, when you're going to bring the trophy by. So it's very, very humbling and very, very cool to see that side of it.
I just want
to point out, I did not give your number to anybody, okay? So it isn't me that is circulating your number, all right? So somebody might be giving that number out, but it's not me that has been giving your number out. And another Phoenix Pro getting a win. I mean, I know we're title sponsored by Phoenix. I run a Phoenix as well. It's amazing how many of them are on the Elite Tour, but whether it was Drew Benton or, I mean, you look all season long, it just seems like if you're running a Phoenix, you're winning, you know?
Yeah, I mean, if that's what it takes, I'm dang sure going to keep running one, no doubt.
Well, you know, and you got that big water like that, you know, at Santee Cooper, where and it also can be a little bit dicey, obviously, especially, you know, down in Lake Marion. But, you know, I would imagine there are times you're pretty happy that you're in a Phoenix at that point, because I don't think anything handles that big water as well as a Phoenix.
No, I'm right there with you. I run the 21 PHX, and I've ran it for this is my fifth, sixth, seventh one. I don't know what it is, but I can't get away from them.
Yeah.
It's that boat that handles it no matter if we're in skinny water or we're in the big water. And, Sunday, she was not little water. I can promise you. We come across there. My camera guy put his head down. He was just like, I said, you don't want to look. And it was bad. And we got back and he said, well, that wasn't terrible at all. I said, it wasn't. I mean, you're running a Phoenix, son. I mean,
well,
we're in the rig that handles this water.
And that's, you know, and be honest, we're not, I mean, you know, not telling stories out of school here. You get a cameraman climbing into your boat or a marshal climbing into your boat and they see that you're running a Phoenix, they're usually pretty happy. They're like, oh, nice, guy's got a Phoenix. You know,
I've never had somebody.
Yeah.
I've had guys literally jump in my boat and be like, boy, I looked you up and seen you run a Phoenix. And he said, I'm pumped up. Like, this is the best riding boat you're going to have. And I said, it's the only one to have.
Yeah. I run a PHX as well, and the creature comforts are outstanding. I love the room in the front in terms of the I can't put enough tackle in there. I feel like I'm overloading it, and there's still room to put more stuff in there. I've got the rod locker to the right side of mine. I'm a big guy, so I don't like to put too much weight on that side of the boat, on the driver's side of the boat. I don't think I got anything in there. I mean, I got next to nothing in there on that side, and I got a lot of stuff in my boat. But you know what I don't have? I don't have heated seats and a heated steering wheel, my friend. I don't know if you got that stuff. You got that. I don't have that on mine.
No, I'm still old school. I break the old hot hands out. I mean,
yeah.
Which we don't fish in just extremely cold weather, except the classic. Now it was cold. Some gun of the classic.
Yeah.
But now I ain't doing that. I'm still rolling old school on that part. I mean, it would be nice. Swindle tells me how good it is all the time.
Yeah.
He likes to brag about it, tell him how toasty he is over there. But, you know, I'm not going to complain.
Well, he's like me. He's an old dude like me. And, you know, our blood thins out a little bit, I think, after a certain period of time. Speaking of Swindle, you know, it's just been – you feel like it's been a long time coming for you, right? And you'd be like, you know, you've been close in the past. There have been times. But, you know, when am I going to get this win and so on? You've been on the tour like 5 years. When you think about all the guys that have been on this tour for a long time, I mean a long time, that do not have one of those blue trophies. And Gerald, God love him. I mean, I fish his 13 fishing rods and reels, and I love them. And Gerald's a two-time AOI champion, doesn't have a blue trophy, you know, doesn't have one of these. And there are a number of other guys that are like that. These things are hard to win. So even though it feels like it's been a long time, is it humbling to know that you do have one in 5 years?
Oh, 100%. I mean, it was like you said, I've came close a few times. Well, every year I've had opportunity to win one, and I've not been able to put it away. And like you said, Swindle, I mean, he's Swindle. I mean, I grew up watching him and how good of an angler, how versatile. You win two AOIs, that's insane.
Yeah.
Honestly. I mean, that's, to me, I mean, winning one, don't get me wrong, I love this. I love that trophy.
Mm-hmm.
But AOI, to me, is the mecca. I mean, I think that, to me, is actually above the classic. Because when you go all year and you get to beat 104, 109 guys – all year long across the entire country, that's special. You know, that's super, super special. And so, I mean, that's a big deal. I mean, AOI is probably at the top of my list, big time to win one.
Luke Palmer with us here coming off of his victory at Santee Cooper. And speaking of special, you definitely had some special trees that were out there. And just talk about that, because you got a lake that's got tens of thousands of these cypress trees everywhere. I would have no idea where to start. How do you determine, okay, this would be an area that I think these trees could be good? How many trees did you look at throughout practice before you decided what you were looking for? And how much of it, I don't know, it was a God thing maybe, just put you on the right tree?
I went to Ever Lake. I consider that three lakes. You know, the lower lake, Moultrie, Marion, and then when you go above the bridge to the stump hole up that way, I consider that a whole nother lake. Mm-hmm. And I went to all three of them four times, I think, during practice. It was quite the deal. I just kept at it. And I actually didn't catch very many fish in practice off trees at all. Like, I can probably put on one hand how many bites I even had around the trees. Mm. I was catching them out of eelgrass. Eelgrass has really exploded around the lake, and which I think is really going to be good in the next few years, going to get the bass habitat back to them to where their fingerlings can spawn and, you know, and have a good coverage of them. But it was on day one. I know a lot of people are probably watching Bass Track and be like, Luke, you have zero fish. Maybe his guy's not updating. You know, I didn't have a fish at 1:30. I hadn't caught a fish until 1:15. It was a 13.5-incher.
Yeah.
So, I mean, whenever you talk about, you know, I said on stage, I was, you're in the mecca of fishing right here. You better start showing up, you know. And I went out to a tree that I had caught a fish off of a year or two ago. And I caught a 2-pounder. I said, hey, we ain't going to blank. And then I caught a 3, and then I went back to the grass. And I kept fishing it, and I said, gosh, if I can just – I thought if in the grass, if I could get bit, I could have 25 to 35 pounds.
Wow.
I mean, that was the quality that was in it. But the sun came out, and it warmed up during the tournament, and I actually pulled up to another tree, and I caught a 7.5, like a 4 and a 3, and you know, things went really good after that from then on. But it was – I fished a ton of trees. But I really thought I had the tree deal figured out 100%. Like, oh, yeah, this is what you got to have on these trees. If you had eelgrass around the trees and you had a void in between the tree and the grass, you're guaranteed most of the time mm-hmm. at the certain depth you're in. And that also came to a number of halt. There was nowhere near that. I mean, 2 out of the 4 days, I caught them off some trees that had absolutely nothing around them. I don't know if they just had some harder bottom that those fish were associating to spawn with or what was going on. But it was just I had to cover a ton of trees. I never caught fish off of the same tree back-to-back days. I never caught a fish from the difference from first day and fourth day. I never caught a fish off the same tree. So it was a major deal of just covering water and lining up and just being at the right tree at the right time.
Yeah, well, I can see that makes a lot of sense. And you were very consistent, 21-3 day one, and you built over the next couple of days, 23-9 you had in day two, 26-3 in day three, and then hammers at home with 26 pounds, just under 26 pounds on the final day. You got the, you got the blue trophy. And you almost got that century belt. I mean, it got to a point where you were within 3 pounds of that century belt. And we're going to get to that in just a moment. We'll take a short break, though. We'll come back with more with Luke Palmer. It is the wrap of the winner's circle with Luke Palmer. He did a tremendous job. 96 pounds, 14 ounces. Briefly, Mark Menendez had taken the lead in this tournament. But Luke Palmer, they started biting for him on championship Sunday. And when that happened, he just blew by the field and ended up winning this thing by about 14 pounds. Or so. More with Luke Palmer next, right here on Phoenix Boats Bassmaster Radio on the Bassmaster Radio Network.
Welcome back to Phoenix Boats Bassmaster Radio. Now, here's your host, Tom Abraham.
Now, welcome back, Phoenix Coast Bassmaster Radio, and we are visiting with Luke Palmer, who got himself a big-time victory at Santee Cooper, $100,000 and a blue trophy. And You know, Luke, we were mentioning just before the break there that the Century Belt kind of came into play almost there. 3 pounds. I mean, you would have had to have a 29-pound bag basically on the final day to get there. But you left a little bit of room, I guess, day one. Did you ever think going in that you had a shot at 100 pounds of bass in this deal?
No, I really thought 82 to 86 would win this deal. I really thought that was a that was my thought process. 22 pounds a day is strong, no matter where you're at. You know, I mean, even at St. Lawrence River, 22 pounds is strong. So it was – that's where I thought. And I still didn't believe that I – even with the weight I had, that I would have won. I didn't think it would take that much, especially – it looked like we you know, thrust them pretty good. But – you know, it was a 7 to 10 bites a day.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's, you know, you got 10 hours a day. That's one bite an hour or, you know, eight, whatever, you know, bite and a half an hour. That's pretty tough to keep your head mentally in it, you know? Yeah. So it was a tough one. It wasn't just like we just went out there and smashed them. It was a grinder tournament, which is something I like to do. I don't know if I like to do it. I like to go out and catch 25 pounds and just chill out, you know.
Right.
But that doesn't always happen. Well, it kind of did, I guess, on day four. You know, catch 25 pounds by 10 o'clock and coast the rest of the day without coasting.
Yeah, but there was the first hour and a half there. I mean, you guys don't know what's going on in the other boats. And Menendez had a couple of 6-pounders early on. He was out more towards the main lake, and there was, you know, the wind was coming up. The weather was coming in. You don't catch your first one to 8:39. Now, for most of us, we think, oh, you know, this is pretty good. We were already catching them by 8:39, and you had 22 pounds or so, you know, by a little bit later on in the day. But the reality is, you know, it was a little bit of a slow start for you. Was there any, did you have any concern about that as it was happening?
No, I actually started on some stuff I hadn't ever fished before. Mm-hmm. Because I knew kind of where I was going, and I wanted to try something different. And I was hoping the sun was going to come out. When the sun came out, the fish got way more active on those trees.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to do a little something different, and I had a couple fish travel on my bait, but they wouldn't eat it. A couple of good ones. And I said, you got to get your troll motor on high and you got to cover some water. So I finally went to an area that I had some history and some confidence in, and I pulled in there and actually caught, I ended up catching 8 or 9 keepers that day.
Mm.
But the bulk came off of two trees I have never caught a fish off of in my life. So yeah. It was just something you just had to go. You had to go fishing.
Yeah.
In cover water.
Your bass track, if I'm looking at it right, your bass track was a little light, okay? You were a little light on the bass track. Is that you? You know, what's the deal there? Because I don't want to say you were sandbagging, because it's still the bass track showed you winning by, you know, 8 or 10 pounds, but you actually were winning this thing by about 14 pounds.
Yeah, I'm not very good at it. I mean, I was pumped up. I don't catch many fish over 5-6 pounds in my life. I mean, that's just not – I'm not a very good judger anyway. I don't want to be heavy for sure. I don't want to be like, oh, I've got 30 pounds and end up with 27 or 28. I didn't know what I had until I actually finally weighed them at one point when I caught my fifth keeper. I said, I've got to see what I got just to give me a sense of direction where I'm at. And when I started weighing them, I was like, wow, that 5.5 was 7. You know, this 6 was as close to 7. And the, you know, 3 3/4, 4-pounder is close to 5.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, and when you're in the heat of the moment and all that stuff's going on, it's hard to, I'm not a very good judger on them. I mean, I can judge a 2.5 to a 3.5 pounder pretty consistently. But actually getting a big one like that doesn't happen very often for me.
You're not a weigh guy then. So you're not breaking out the scale. You're just boom into the box they go, and
yeah.
That's it.
Oh yeah. Yeah, because normally I'm one of those guys that get 6-7 bites a day.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm not one of those guys like, oh, I've got 20 keepers a day, I gotta start weighing stuff and being able to call out. That's not me. I'm a grinder guy, and I just gotta keep my head down and fish. You know, and I try not to think about that. I know what my smallest fish is, and I put him in there, I'm like, you know, normally I got 3 that are close to the same size and 2 that are close to 5. And then, you know, you kind of understand then.
Right. All right, Luke Palmer with us here. All right, so it was the woolly bug that was doing a damage for you, the yum woolly bug, but you used different weights. Explain that, because I thought that was kind of fascinating that you had two or three different rigs set up with different weights.
Yeah, I kind of figured that out last year. You know, I mean, just so happens I was using almost the exact same setup that I caught them last year as this year. Except I had 18-pound test and 20-pound test on, certain weights that I was throwing. I had anywhere from 3/16, a quarter, and a 5/16-ounce weight on my yum woolly bug on a 7.3 Kara Amistad, which is kind of my setup for flipping stable, you know, all the time. And the weight kind of determined how the fish was acting. If I had a fish that was real skittish, this is going to sound almost backwards, you would think you would throw a lighter weight in there on a bed. And I would actually take the heavier weight and throw past it and inch it over to the bed. The fish would probably leave, but I could able to let that weight hold that bait in position when I was shaking it. So that lighter weight, when I'd pull it through the bed, I would have to just, when I go to shaking it, it would move further. And I needed that bait to stay in position and just quiver and shake, and which is what's really good about that woolly bug.
Yeah, and it did do the job for you. There was no doubt about it. Forward-facing sonar was very important to you as well. Luke Palmer with us here off the win at Santee Cooper. It was interesting. Mark Menendez told us earlier that he felt like he was spooking his fish with his forward-facing sonar, that it was bouncing off the trees and moving them out a little bit. You never had that concern, it seemed like, that, and you would literally be like, okay, I caught that one, and that one. Oh, look, there's one more left in there, and now I'm going to work on that one.
Yeah, I got to do some of that. I stayed off the trees a little further than guys probably mm-hmm. would normally. I've played with sonar quite a bit. I'm not no specialist by no means with it. But being back home, we fish a lot of shallow water, and I was able to use it more. And I have some ponds back home that I put my little aluminum rig in, and it allowed me to mess with it and really kind of get dialed in and what to look for. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not like when you're fishing 15, 18 foot of water and you chase the fish around and try to catch him. You know, that's not what I'm doing with it. And it's just, right. I just need to get a location where the fish is at, just to know where he's in the vicinity and to give me confidence to sit there and keep fishing for him.
All right, finally, I noticed something on your rods. It's something that I do as well. Not that I think I invented it, but I don't know. Maybe I think I invented it a little bit. But I use electrical tape to determine the speed of my rods. I get three different speed rods, reels, and I'll put the electrical tape on there. I use the red, green, and white electrical tape. And then I actually write on the electrical tape the weight, the line of the weight that is on that particular rod. I've seen a few guys doing it. I see yellow on some of your rods. Is that indicating line size, or is that indicating the type of rod, or is that indicating reel speed?
No, it actually just, it does a type of rod for me. Primarily use Falcon Caras. Mm-hmm. So they all look the same, you know, to an extent.
Okay.
I have a 7.3 Amistad and the 7.4, it's a more of a heavier jig rod.
Right.
They look, you know, they're 7.3, 7.4. So I put blue on my 7.4s, yellow on my 7.3, my reaction rods, you know, whether it be the cranker, or the deep runner, I have red on those. That just shows me my reaction rods. That way when I'm looking at them, because I try to keep my reels looking the same, you know, pretty consistent as far as what's going on with my rods. And that way it's a lot quicker to pick them up, but I keep mine just on my rod action, not necessarily my rod line size or my read or my speed of my reel.
All right, so there you go. There's another way to do it. It's, you know, as fishermen, we're always kind of tinkering with that kind of stuff, right? And you're coming up with the best organizing system, and so now you know how Luke Palmer does it. Luke, congratulations on a win, man. It's fantastic. Couldn't happen to a better guy, and we wish you the luck. 13th place now in the standings, in the AOI standings. Wish you the best of luck the rest of the way.
All right, I sure appreciate you, bud. Thank you.
All right, man, thank you. That's Luke Palmer. Good guy, and we're going to see more of that now. We're going to see more of him winning now. Now he breaks through. We will see him get that done a little bit more. All right, that's going to do it for this week's show. Remember, it's always just a click away at Bassmaster.com/radio. Or you could just hit the Nation button at Bassmaster.com and click on Bassmaster Radio. That will get you in as well. Don't forget about Rapala Fantasy Fishing as well for the next event at Lay Lake that is coming up. It won't be long now before we get to there as well. We want to thank all our great sponsors as well for making it possible for us to bring you today's show and our guests, the top three from Santee Cooper, Drew Cook, along with Mark Menendez and the champion Luke Palmer. Until next time, keep those lines tight and nets heavy. I'm Tom Abraham, and this has been Phoenix Boats Bassmaster Radio on the Bassmaster Radio Network.